Last Word on Today FM.
Mary McKeown, Cal Thomas with us. And Cal, I think we should start by talking about the horrific scenes from Texas over the 4th of July weekend. The death toll now over 100 people from the catastrophic flooding. And I'd imagine anyone who has seen the images of what's happened and some of the time today videos showing how the water went up in such extraordinary volumes at such incredible heights can only have been shocked, and just how terrible it must have been for those people caught up in it.
Yes, Matt, 26 feet above the banks of the Guadalupe River. This river flooded in 1987, too, and 10 teenagers' lives were lost during that flood. There are going to be a lot of questions about it. I have a very good friend who lost two granddaughters. They were twins, 8 years old. So many people devastated. Parents and other relatives going through the debris, which is extensive, picking up dolls and pieces of clothing from their children. It's very, very sad. There's going to be a number of questions about this. One of them is, why wasn't there a better warning system? There was an old warning system, but it apparently was quite away from the actual area of the river flooding. And the reports are that the mayor did not want to pay for what it would take to upgrade the warning system. So there's that problem as well. There'll be a lot of second guessing and a lot of investigating. But right now, the officials in Texas and elsewhere are asking for prayers and for donations to help the families overcome this. I used to live in Texas during my reportorial years, and I'm very familiar with these camps and the flooding. But this is very, very sad.
It is very, very sad. Mary McKeown, will it be possible to investigate what actually happened as to warnings and responsibilities without it all becoming politicized in a very ugly fashion?
I think, unfortunately, that's very unlikely. And like Cal, Matt, this is an area that I know very, very well. I spent a lot of time there when I was living in the States. It's one of the most beautiful parts of America. And because Texas is so arid and dry in so many of the plains, the hill country is like a respite for people. So, you know, it's not just summer camps, it's campers, it's people who come in RVs. There are lots of lodges and dude ranches. And I think that it's going to be some time, because a lot of people come there to go off grid along the riverbanks, just park up and go fishing. So I don't think we even know what the total will be at this point. But to get back to your question about the investigations, you know, Cal, you're right about this. And I understand that there was a warning system put in Comal County, which is another of the hill country districts that's also prone to flooding by the Guadalupe. That was put in. It cost only $300,000, and apparently Kirk County, the powers that be there, refused to put in a similar system because they said it might cost $1 million. This would be a flash warning siren, and when, you know, a siren goes out to warn of flash floods to give people time to basically get to higher ground as quickly as possible. It would happen night or day, and it's very, very effective, especially for people with sketchy cell phone coverage or whatever else. This wasn't done on because of a simple cost basis, and there is a lot of climate change scepticism in Texas. I've come across it repeatedly, and apparently the local people just didn't want to spend the money on something that they didn't think was necessary. Now, people say this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. This is the fourth time in 40 years that this has happened in Texas. Cal mentioned the 1987 event. There was another in 2015 where a different river, the Blanca River, which runs parallel, also burst its banks. And one family of holidaymakers, nine of them were swept away with their house ripped off its pilings. Only one person survived, and a lot of other people were killed and injured as well. So this is something that keeps happening, and we're being told it's that the weather is getting more and more extreme. And the government of Rick Abbott, the Texas state legislature, and their governor and their lieutenant governor have all insisted that these are are acts of God, they're once in a lifetime events, and there's nothing anyone can do about them. We know that this is not true, but they will not spend the money and they will not do anything. Texas' whole national identity as a state, and indeed it sees itself as a nation, is caught up in two industries. One is the oil industry and the other is the cattle industry. Both are two of the biggest contributors to climate change, and they will not do anything that will compromise those industries.
Carl, do you want to say anything more on this?
Well, the flash floods are hard to predict, and they have occurred long before the so-called climate change debate, Matt. And there was only about a 45-minute warning in this, and it was the middle of the night. Everybody was asleep, very difficult to arouse them. The governor, Governor Abbott, yesterday pledged that the money would be available for the future to install a better system. There's been a comparison made that the kind of system is needed, like the one in Israel that warns of incoming missiles, and I think that's, you know, the amount of money is ought to be irrelevant if it can save lives. They're the most valuable thing. And I dislike this notion of act of God. If you want to blame it on somebody, how about an act of Satan? I'd go along with that a lot better.
Okay. Carl, talking of Satan, Jeffrey Epstein was involved in some of the most horrific acts when he was alive. He was this predator who went after children for his sexual desires to be sated, and hung around with many of the rich and famous. And we've all seen the videos and photographs of him with Donald Trump, for example. So tell us about how suddenly the investigation into Jeffrey Epstein, the apparent existence of files which the Trump administration was going to make available to the public, has suddenly run into the sand.
Well, Attorney General Pam Bondi, I believe, still says that a list will be released. But he wasn't just palling around with Donald Trump when he was a businessman. Bill Clinton had pictures taken with him. There were others. The big question remains for me, Matt, is how in the world did he commit suicide in a jail cell in New York? These are supposed to have paper sheets, not blankets where you can hang yourself. The reports were that there were no cameras on. He did not have a cellmate, which was very unusual, who might have prevented something like this. There are a lot of questions that still need to be answered. I think the public deserves to see the list. I want to see it. I don't care if it's Republicans, Democrats, current, former presidents, whatever it is. This still smacks of a cover-up, and I think the conspiracy theorists will continue to conspire and say that there's a cover-up until we get all of the information.
What list? I think Pam Bondi has said now there's no list.
Well, there has to be a list, of course. Giselle, what's her face?
Maxwell.
Max,
in prison.
Right, went to prison. I think she knows where the list is. And Epstein kept good records. I think that there is a list, and it ought to be continue to be investigated. The public deserves the right to know, especially when they're voting or not voting for certain people.
Has the Trump administration, Marion Manisha, shut this one down?
Well, it is very strange, and I agree with Cal, because we do know that in February, the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, told Fox News that there was a client list sitting on her desk right now, which was waiting to be reviewed. You know, so she said this on Fox News. There's a record of her saying this. We know that Dan Bongino, the wholly unqualified deputy director of the FBI, when he had his podcast, he went on and on about this conspiracies about the list, and he knew the list, and there were people on it, etc. And Kash Patel was another one. And suddenly now they're all saying, oh no, it was a suicide. There's no list. We know everything there is to know about this. So, you know, you can't have it both ways. Either they were just ginning this all up to get audience numbers in advance for their crappy podcasts, or which do they actually believe, and which evidence supports what they believe? I don't actually know. But we do know that Jeffrey Epstein and Donald Trump were very close friends. We do know Bill Clinton was on the so-called Lolita Express on multiple occasions. And we also know that Virginia Gruffer, the young woman who was tragically committed suicide earlier this year and was recruited and trafficked to, and she received a settlement from Prince Andrew to the tune of about $16 million. We do know that she was first picked up at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago club where she was working as a teenager in the locker rooms. So there are so many things about this and so many questions that are still unanswered, and it's deeply concerning, for want of a better word, to have somebody like the Attorney General who says one thing one minute and then totally does a U-turn a couple of months later when it so suits her without any justification or explanation. The same is true of the head of the FBI and the deputy director.
Of course, Trump's former buddy Elon Musk brought up the Epstein case a few weeks ago, and then he backed off it, and then he re-emerged over the weekend saying that he's launching his own political party. How seriously are Musk's continued interventions been taken, Cal?
Well, he's a narcissist, just like Trump, of course, Matt. I think, you know, third parties have never worked in America. Ross Perot divided the vote and gave the election in 1992 to Bill Clinton. Former Governor George Wallace of Alabama tried the third party route. They just haven't worked. People talk about it all the time. They're frustrated by both parties at some level, but third parties never work. He says basically what George Wallace used to say: there's not a dime's worth of difference between the two parties. Musk says now we have only one party in America, which he called the Porky Pig Party, because this so-called big, beautiful bill that just passed and was signed into law is loaded with pork and all kinds of other things, despite the claims by the administration and the Republican members of Congress that it's actually going to cut spending. In fact, it increases spending. But if you're looking for honesty in Washington, you're not going to find it.
But Cal, maybe a third party is not going to ever win power, but can't it do significant damage to whoever is in power or whoever's trying to take power by being able to influence the outcome in key congressional races, which can tip the balance in the House of Representatives or in the Senate?
Yes, it can, and probably will, Matt, if he goes through with it. But people need to understand, just because you're frustrated, you're voting for a third party, you're basically sealing the deal for perhaps a party that you don't like, whose policies that you do not endorse. So it really is working against the interests of people who want to go the third party route, because in most cases, it elects people whose policies the person going for the third party don't agree with.
How much damage is this going to do to Musk's own commercial interests, would you say, Marion? Because if he keeps coming back and sniping at Trump, is there not more danger to him and his businesses that Trump will retaliate in a practical measure rather than just giving him a lot of guff?
Well, you know, I think his whole political adventure or misadventure, depending on how you view it, has been incredibly costly for his firm. And you would think that somebody who's supposedly one of the smartest people in the world would know one basic fact: Republicans don't drive electric vehicles, okay? Democrats and liberals are the ones who buy Teslas. And so what he has done is he has totally alienated his entire market base in America and beyond with his endorsing of white supremacist parties through Europe. He has destroyed his own customer base. I don't know how he could have been so stupid as to do that, but we saw that shares fell in his company
in
again
Tesla.
By another
7%. I remember there are other companies
Tesla.
With government contracts like SpaceX and Starlink and the rest
yes.
as well.
Yet they're all being affected. Now, Trump, we've seen he's extremely vindictive. He will go after his enemies. There are certain functions that SpaceX and Starlink carry out at the moment that there isn't a substitute for. So I don't think Trump at this moment will be able to, for example, they had to get SpaceX to bring the astronauts back from space. There are huge parts of America that rely on Starlink for Wi-Fi and connectivity. But as soon as an opponent or somebody else comes along, i.e. Jeff Bezos waiting in the wings with his Blue Origin experiment, then I think Trump would happily switch just to teach Musk a lesson. It is astonishing the degree to which they've fallen out, but I don't see, and I agree to Cal, look, nobody even really likes Elon Musk in the country. He has alienated just about everybody. He might fund a few primaries just to take votes away from Republicans, just to take a few seats away, but nobody's going to join a political party that's headed up by Elon Musk, apart from a couple of tech nerds. I just don't see it happening.
Okay, but one of the things as well that markets now seem to ignore, Cal, is the whatever pronouncements Trump makes on tariffs. And we've got the 90 deals in 90 days was supposed to happen by July 9th. That deadline has moved. It's the 1st of August now. He's throwing around numbers in relation to some countries, other countries. And it seems that the markets, whatever, are yawning, believing that he just doesn't follow through in what he does. That it's the taco trades. Trump always chickens out. So what do you reckon is going on now? Should we be taking his tariffs seriously?
Well, Matt, it reminds me of a great line from the late comedian Groucho Marx, who said, "I have principles. If you don't like them, I have others." He is the original flip-flopper here. Whether it's Ukraine, I'm not going to send any more weapons to Ukraine because America's stockpile is being affected, to saying yesterday, I am going to send more weapons to Ukraine after all. Tariffs, we're going to have tariffs. Well, we're going to pause for 90 days before we do that. Whoops, well, we're going to have tariffs against some but not others. Many people are coming to me now, the president says, wanting to cut a deal. Well, we're not seeing them. Where are they? So when you say people aren't taking this very seriously, I think you're right on the mark.
And could it be that despite the way that he burnishes his reputation and his fan base does it for him, Marion, that he's actually a crap deal maker?
Yeah, I think that about sums it up. I mean, really, like, if you look at this and him sending off letters to random leaders, Tunisia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Serbia, saying, I'm warning you now that we're going to, you know, he's so chaotic. He just thrives on chaos. There's no coherence. There's no strategy. It's all knee-jerk. You know, there were supposed to be tariffs on Europe, on the EU as well, and they've been postponed as well until August, allegedly. He has zero credibility as a deal maker. His economic policies have zero credibility. And, you know, when you think of the convulsions of the market when he first decided he was doing all these, when he came out with his game show list of tariffs, every country in the world, and the markets convulsed and there was chaos. And now the same markets and the same financial analysts are just shrugging and going, oh, for Christ's sake, you know, here we go again. I don't know where this will end up, but I suspect nowhere near where Trump is saying. As I say, he just doesn't have the credibility and he doesn't have the economic wisdom or the insight to, I think, make any good coherent deals, and nor do the people around him, apparently.
Okay, Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, had dinner with Trump in the White House last night, and here's some good news that he had for his host.
I want to present to you, Mr. President, the letter I sent to the Nobel Prize Committee. It's nominating you for the Peace Prize, which is well-deserved, and you should get it.
Thank you very much. This I didn't know. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming from you in particular, this is very meaningful. Thank you very much, Bibi.
Thank you. Thank you for everything you're doing.
Thank you. It's a great honor.
Yet another example, Cal, of world leaders fawning to Trump's ego.
Well, you remember the old line that women used to use, flattery will get you nowhere. Well, with Trump, flattery will get you everywhere. I think Bibi has learned this lesson very well. But look, I think that Trump is probably more qualified for this really meaningless Nobel Peace Prize than Barack Obama, who got it for doing nothing at all right after he assumed office. These things, these prizes have lost whatever credibility they once had. The Pulitzer Prize for Journalism, the Nobel Peace Prize, wars are going on all over the world. I don't see anybody who's getting these peace prizes, possibly with the exception of Mother Teresa, who is actually contributing to real peace in the world.
Well, I know people who take issue with you on Mother Teresa's qualifications for any peace prizes. The late Mother Teresa, should be said, given that she's dead since 1997. But Marion, one thing he said there, you know, to Netanyahu, this is great, especially coming from you, as if Trump hasn't noticed what Israel has been doing in Gaza, attacking humanitarian food distribution, killing women and children, killing loads of people who could never be described in any way to be part of Hamas. Mm-hmm. Funny how he didn't notice that, Marion, isn't it?
You know, when I saw this, I actually thought this is like the darkest possible political satire. To have Benjamin Netanyahu have the gall to nominate anyone, with his record for a peace prize, and then to have Trump respond with this coming from you, it just defies any. I don't know what kind of a world we're currently living in, but it's the whole thing is obscene. And of course, as you said, and as Cal said, Benjamin Netanyahu, it's so easy to manipulate Trump. He has this obsession for God knows what reason. You think it's like the world World Cup golf trophy or something, if there is such a thing. He has had this obsession forever with winning a Nobel Peace Prize. I've no idea why, possibly because Barack Obama got one undeservedly, as Cal pointed out. It's ridiculous, but it allows this kind of fawning and cajolery and flattery. And once again, Netanyahu is playing Trump like he played Biden, like he's played previous US leaders like a fiddle, and is getting away with just the most appalling behaviour in Gaza and the most appalling humanitarian tragedy unfolding there and getting worse day by day.
One last thing, Cal, because since we last spoke, Trump has got his, what he likes to call his big beautiful bill, through the Houses of Congress, and he signed it into law, and yet you've been writing about how you think it'll still be hard to sell to the American public. Does he care about selling it now that it's in place?
Well, I think it has to be sold because the Democrats are going to make an issue out of it in the elections next year for the Senate and House. And they're going to use their usual playbook that Trump, like all Republicans, are trying to end Social Security and Medicare. They've been running this same play for 50 years. It seems to work for them because fear is a factor that plays well to their party. There are problems in the measure, as I've said earlier. I think there are too much pork, too many special interests spending. There's $5 trillion is going to be added to the debt if this bill is made permanent. And there are a lot of problems with it. Now, you know, you can talk about how great it is and all the rest, but anything done in Washington is always problematic. The bill is the law now is 940 pages long, and I guarantee you that not a single member of Congress has read the whole thing, although they've contributed a lot to it.
Cal Thomas, Marion McKeown, thank you.
The Last Word on Today FM.